Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rich Hutton.
Good afternoon.
And Peter Graves.
Good afternoon.
Man is new, but man is checking out a whole bunch of different things that we do, so he's dropped by for a lovely little podcast.
Yes, I have.
He's loving it. So we've got a whole bunch of different things. A whole load of news happened this week. We had the Tokyo Game Show. We had a whole load of stuff with MPs and microtransactions and loot boxes and whatever. So we've got things that we can touch on. You can also check on the regular What Culture Gaming channel, where we have more in-depth videos, things that went on for 10 minutes on specific topics and whatever. But I just thought we'd run down a whole load of stuff. So I'm going to open with Resident Evil. I don't know if you guys have already seen the stuff that came out of Tokyo Game Show.
Yep.
Fact that they... Okay, so they led with this thing called Project Resistance. They sort of tweeted this thing out. They were like, oh, we're going to do this thing called Project Resistance. Turns out it was a Resident Evil Outbreak sort of semi-sequel, like an online multiplayer group-based thing, which coming after Resident Evil 2 is, for me, is one of the best feet forward they could do other than just remaking another Resident Evil. I guess off the bat, what do you guys think of just online group-based Resident Evil?
I love the idea.
Same.
I'm genuinely surprised about the fact that how many people have gotten really pissed about this, like looking at all the videos, all the uploads on the various channels, they've uploaded the same footage over and over again. It's had loads of hate, and it's like it's Dead by Daylight meets Resident Evil. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
He also plays Mr. X if you want to just like.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's like I don't get why this is being proverbially shat on.
Mm. Like, I think it's just the idea that, oh, it's another online thing.
Yeah, rather than saying, oh, why is it not Resident Evil 8? Why is it not Resident Evil 3 Remake? It's like, give them a break. Give them a chance to do something really cool, because you never know. It might be really good. It could be really bad.
There's also, like,
it could be bad.
Yeah, there's plenty of leaks that, like, the RE3 remake is coming. So it's like, that will be happening.
As a little stopgap thing, it'd be nice. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to give it a go, because I loved Resi 2. Mm-hmm. So I'm keen to try this.
Fancy bit of online shooting.
I'm not really much of an online gamer, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But I'm not, like... I'm never against it. Mm-hmm. So, like, why not just have both? In fact, when games come out that are just online, mm-hmm. I'm always kind of disappointed because, like, oh, that game looked good, but I'd want a single player story campaign. Like Destiny, like that. I never played it, but mm-hmm. it looked good. And then I found out it was just online. Or even, I never got into any of the Fallout games. And then they released Fallout 76, and I was like, oh, it's a new one. I'll get it because I haven't played it before. And then it was online. So
you want your old school Fallout?
Yeah.
You want your 3 or 4? I think because they haven't mentioned if there's any sort of like worthwhile offline component. And the reason that I'm mentioning it in terms of like an overall news thing is that on a write up on Eurogamer, they noted that Capcom are openly saying that it might not even make it to release. This whole idea of this online Resident Evil thing. They're basically looking at a lot of fan feedback, which is like you said, is pretty negative. At the minute, they've got a beta scheduled for October the 4th to October the 7th. Mm-hmm. And I guess that is going to sort of keep an eye on the general fandoms and the feedback and everything. And if everybody starts to hate it, maybe they just pull the plug on it altogether.
That's really peculiar because the hate that I've seen has been like 50-50 when you look at likes, dislikes on YouTube videos for it seems very split. I think it's just people being salty. They want Resi 8, they want Resi 3, don't want something new, because admittedly Resident Evil's track record of multiplayer hasn't been very good.
No, I mean, like, the nearest comparison was that Resident Evil Outbreak from like back in like 2003, which you had to buy a separate modem to get online on the PS2 and whatever, but the feel of Resident Evil, I mean, so many people checked out Resi 2. Like, I know that you got into it this year, and it's like that game's combat model is just so solid. Like, I like the idea of putting that online, especially in a world without like a current Left 4 Dead or whatever. There's not really a go-to.
Vermintide.
Which one?
Vermintide.
What's that on?
Vermintide.
What console's
it's
that on?
Everything, mate.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's a PC. Mentioned
this literally last week, Scott.
I think if you're going to sort of like look at the general sort of niche that I think something like Left 4 Dead's left behind, Vermintide's a good go-to. I think it's on Xbox as well.
It is. Yeah,
so like, you can kind of go to that. But if you just want to shoot like regular zombies and not crazy demons, that seems to be something that maybe they can tap into, because there isn't the next thing that Turtle Rock's doing is Bound for Blood, but that's not until like next year.
Ugh.
So there is something like that. I don't know. Depends how much you like shooting a whole bunch of different zombies. Around random thing I can throw in, which I found from a different user on Twitter called Samir AID, Samir Aid, Mr. Big AIDS, said that he found out exactly how much the Switch will track your playtime in terms of the hour count. There is actually a number that it maxes out on, which what do you guys think it is?
Is it like a parental control thing?
No, it's like, so when you play something on Switch, you can go into your profile and it'll list like, oh, you've played this game for 100 hours, which like, right, okay, I have 120 hours banked on the new Zelda.
Right, yeah.
So it's like, there's that, but the Switch thing does max out eventually. So what do you think it is?
999.
Close. Good, sir.
999,000.
Oh, to be fair, it is 9,999. And apparently that's when it just stops. That's when it thinks you've done enough. You can't play anything else anymore.
There's no fifth digit.
Man. I'm curious.
That means eventually I will hit that mark on Mario Kart 8 Deluxe because for some reason that's my most played game on Switch.
Mm-hmm. Is that all, like, of all time on one game?
That's per game. So I guess you've definitely done as much as you could.
Sell by date of the game.
If you manage to play 10,000 hours of a game, the Switch would just stop.
The Switch is just done.
Ah, never mind. Okay, you're a loser.
That's like of like a platinum or whatever. So this is a write-up on the gamers, sort of applied some mathematics and stuff to it. Said that for Breath of the Wild, it released on March 3rd, 2017. So for 9,999 hours to apply to that game, the person would have had to have played 10 hours and 50 minutes a day since 2017, which is some hardcore gaming.
I mean, I'm surprised you haven't matched that yet, Scott.
That's kind of what I thought I was on. I mean, I guess I moved on to stuff after the first year, but I was averaging about 10 hours a day. But wow. I guess in terms of Switch stuff, I don't know, what's the most time that you guys have put into a game where that's something that's remotely comparable? I haven't like sunk 10 hours a day on something since like Metal Gear Solid 5.
Ooh.
It's been a while.
Simpsons Hit and Run. I was like, bringing it back, got the PS2 out of the loft or whatever, nice, and just started smashing through all the levels, just trying to find every card and everything. And then you find like there's a cheat sheet on the thing of where they are, and then you wish you'd started looking.
Did you go through the whole story again to that Mingan final level?
The one with the zombies?
What's the one you guys got stuck
on? Alien Autopsy Part 3, the last level of the game. Where you're with Homer and Grandpa trying to deliver the toxic waste to the spaceship at school. And you tap the car with anything, it gets breathed on and it explodes.
It's a bit of a negative way for that game to end, considering it's such a brilliant game otherwise.
It is awesome. I mean, I thought it was difficult, but I never really hated it.
Oh, right, it gets hard at the end, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't think of a game on Switch I could manage to play for 10,000 hours. I genuinely don't, unless they manage to release Planet Coaster for the Switch.
Oh, God, maybe.
There we go, name dropped it. I don't know. I couldn't think. Yeah, like I said, I think my most played game on Switch is Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which is about 150 hours, I want to say.
Something that's more like arcadey, I guess, is easier to sink time into. Breath of the Wild.
10,000 hours is a lot.
I don't even know what you
time.
Do in Breath of the Wild for 10,000 hours.
No, exactly.
Do every single shrine puzzle. So something else that came out about Shenmue 3 is that, because that's obviously finally about to come out. I think the release date is like next month or whatever.
Ooh, November 19th.
Yes. Oh, man, are you a big Shenmue fan?
I like looked it up.
You're dropping
10
the
minutes
mood.
Ago.
Good.
10
cool.
minutes ago. Never even heard of it before.
Okay, so like the whole thing with Shenmue, obviously massive cult franchise. A lot of people have stood by it as one of the most, you know, pivotal games of all time, and we'd never get a part 3.
Benji.
Yada yada. Mr. Benjamin is on holiday at the minute. Sadly, he could not run in right now and scream about how much he loves it. But so Shenmue 3, there's just this sort of little news thing that came out because of the way that it started out. Like originally it was a Kickstarter, and then it managed to get a publisher. It was announced on stage at Sony Z3 in like 2016 or whatever. But the most recent thing is that they've said that if you don't like what they finally come up with, you only have 2 weeks to get a refund, even though it was this big set records as a Kickstarter project. So you have to play it within 2 weeks after the launch day or you'd have it forever.
That's interesting, because how are they going to do refunds for it on particular platforms?
I don't know unless they do like a code based system and just do it through their
that's weird
site.
Because obviously it's being released on Xbox, PlayStation 4 and the Epic Games Store.
I want to say so
it's like, I don't know whether Epic has got do have a refund policy, but it's very, very convoluted.
Right,
PlayStation don't have one at all.
Nope.
And Xbox do?
Oh god, they seem to have them for like a 24-hour thing.
Something like that. I mean, 2 weeks is 2 weeks is more than enough time. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. But my instant thing is like, how are they gonna refund you?
Yeah, and it's just
that's what I find peculiar, because those, like I said, that means isn't there for the consoles, is for the PC. It depends on whether they get a wrangle over Epic Games, which they won't.
No, it's like, it's a weird comparison. Like you said, like most platforms, like the major platforms, they'll only give you like a few hours, like especially with
Steam
the digital
Steam is
purchase.
2 hours right, of gameplay to give it back.
Mm. I didn't even know you could get refunds off games. I just kind of keep them. And I'm like, oh, that was a bit naff, but I'll hold on to it.
Maybe they just mean
looks
like,
good on the shelf. You know?
Maybe they just mean like secondhand stores. Like you go to CEX and it's like, sorry guys, it's been 2 weeks. We can't accept this anymore.
Shutter comes down.
Shutter's
like,
come down.
40 quid on it. Here's a tenner.
I mean, I like the idea of like, I love the idea of a potential future where digital games can also be refunded for some sort of currency that gets you something else.
I mean, Steam just gives you your money back.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's just like within like time windows, it makes it harder.
Stuff as well. Mm-hmm. No, it's interesting that, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind when I say is, okay, you can refund this within 2 weeks. It makes me think they're looking at that game and going, ah, balls. This could go down really weirdly. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they know the position they're in. Shenmue is obviously so legendary within the industry, and yet this could go completely Pete Tong.
Yeah.
Like, it could be really bad. And I think they know that. That's probably why they're saying, don't worry, you're not going to be completely left in the dark if you don't like it. Mm-hmm, but... Mm-hmm. It doesn't fill you with much confidence.
It's weird because like the recent footage of it, I mean, they seem to be making a game that looks like it's set in, like it's made in the 90s. Like they're deliberately doing something that's a throwback, like very primitive facial animation, very much like quite simplistic animation in terms of fight mechanics. Bad?
Is that not just bad?
It could, well, no, it depends what you have to. Like, if you're a Shenmue unfinished. Fan, if, I think if you're a Shenmue fan, yeah. You're loving that old school stuff.
Right. Yeah, so, it's a stylistic choice.
Yeah, right, even right, though, right, like right. You said, it does, the facial animation is terrible.
Stylistic choice.
It looks like they're taking a PS2 game and giving it a really good lighting engine.
Yes.
Like, which is that essence of like 8th gen just trickling into Shenmue 3.
Look more like a remaster, you know, like when you do
a little
like,
bit.
Yeah, kind remaster of.
In it. And especially the trailer, how it's like panning over everything. It's just sort of like, oh, look how much better it looks now.
We made some worlds. Like, not much gameplay, but we made some worlds.
Remind me of Zelda Breath of the Wild, actually.
Oh, okay.
A bit.
Color palette.
I mean, maybe it's just because of the panning shots over everything, but yeah. Just
hey, if they can get some goodwill on the level of Breath of the Wild, they'll be loving it.
Going back to the 2 weeks, was it, that you can play? Surely if it's like such a cult game, then the people that are going to buy it and play it, they're probably going to complete it in 2 weeks anyway, so sure they can just like, oh, I played it, and I want to refund.
Exactly, so yeah, 2 weeks is a more than good enough period for it, but it depends on whether they're just saying that, and then Xbox and PlayStation go, but we don't have a refund policy, what do you mean? And then Epic go, ours is this, like you need to give a kidney to Epic to get a refund.
I'd assume
that'd
be,
really strange.
Like, they would track how many hours you played, like they must know if you finished the game within that two-week thing. But with Shenmue, like, it kind of, this sort of news comes after the whole thing where they announced a whole bunch of pre-order bonuses, which the Kickstarter backers don't get. You have to purchase them separately.
Oh,
which is like,
God.
That was just a weird move considering that the Kickstarter thing was what got it off the ground in the first place. And like for me, I was like, that's a bit of a kick in the teeth.
Backing video games on Kickstarter, it's a dangerous thing.
It's
especially
weird,
right now with companies like Epic buying out Kickstarted games and then like almost negating the money that's been donated by crowdfunders to get those games online. We had it with... oh, God, there's like three of them and I can't think of what they are.
Well, there'll be Double Fine,
did it? There's been loads, a couple of games that have been, like, some have been coming for years and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, Epic have bought them out now and they're going to go through that and it's like, oh, good, thanks.
Yeah, it's a weird thing in there, this generation. Like I mentioned Double Fine and Tim Schafer, like, they've started crowdfunding stuff before and then signed on to a different company later. And, like, for Double Fine particularly, they just signed on with Xbox. They've just been bought by Microsoft.
I think Psychonauts 2 is their last project without Xbox, though. I think they might be publishing it instead, but I don't think they're going against anything that's happened with Kickstarter.
No, no.
In the past, that has happened.
It's just in terms of like a discrepancy, it's weird. Like the idea of kickstarting and crowdfunding was to help indie projects get off the ground. Like, you know, everyone mucks in together and throws their money in and then we all do it together. But like that, sometimes the attention that those projects get means that some publishers come in and go, actually, we can fund it. And then it ends up kind of changing like the mentality behind what got it off the ground.
It's just
like
buying the movie rights and then not releasing it.
Sometimes, I guess it depends how it goes afterwards. Like Peter Molyneux's stuff is like notorious for like getting like an idea off the ground and then even if he signs on with different publishers, he just spins his wheels forever.
Right,
so it's kind of, it seems to go like project by project. Speaking of projects that have spun their wheels in notably public fashion, Fallout 76, which you mentioned before. The recent thing with that, the big controversy with that at the minute is that basically for a lot of players who have played Fallout 76 since launch, one of the mechanics in that game is that you can accrue different collectibles and food stuff and consumables and stuff. A lot of food that will go rotten over time. Like, obviously, they're playing into the survivalist aspect of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of players were, like, looking for a way to store items. So Bethesda were like, well, we can patch in a fridge, but you got to pay for it.
Yep.
So that was the nearest thing. They could have just given us a nice free fridge. No.
The fact how much are they charging?
$7.
7 quid.
700
atoms. I like £5, £6 ish.
700 atoms.
But a lot of fandom comparing it to the Broken Steel DLC on Fallout 3 because that was $10. Or sorry, $9.99 in dollars for that whole additional, you know, mission set and dialogue and everything. Way more than a little digital fridge, which, you know, bit of a sign of the times.
It was, what was it? There was something. Oh, it was the bag gate with Fallout 76. When they said, oh, okay, you've got this really bad bag. Let's give you a new one. We've got it on the way. Oh, here's 500 atoms. Just, you know, sorry. you go into the game, oh, you can buy that bag in game to use it. Oh, it's 700
items. It's more.
It's more than what they gave us.
Even that, even the pricing of this, $7 in real money is 700 items again. Yeah. So even if you kept on your lovely refunded money from Baggate, you still couldn't afford a fridge. You
can't have a fridge.
So it's just, they just, I don't really think they know.
The thing is, like, they said outwardly at the beginning, this is going to be only cosmetics in this store. And when I was playing 76, it was only cosmetics. And then they were like, here's repair kits. And then here's the refrigerator that slows food from rotting and stuff like that. And it's like, what are you doing?
Do you think, like, just
you've got a game that was sort of clawing its way out and trying to make, like, I'm really quite excited for the end of the year when they release the Wastelanders DLC. I'm going to get back into 76 and see if it's, like, any better. Mm-hmm. But they're still kind of, like, pulling it back in the well. They keep dragging it back down by doing stuff like this. It's like, come on, Bethesda.
I mean, like, because you mentioned, like, you were a bit put off by, like, the online aspect of it and stuff.
Yeah, and generally everyone sort of pandered.
A little bit. Is anything, well, the fridge isn't going to get you back in, but has any of the other stuff they've mentioned enticed you a bit?
Not really.
It's not the best.
There's plenty of free ones of them online. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't really play them either, so. Mm-hmm.
You're either better off avoiding it altogether or waiting long enough that they patch in a feature that's more worthwhile playing. But do you think, like, with this, do you think that they're just trying to get away with more because the spotlight's not on them as much?
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's because, you know, Bethesda have this approach of they say, oh, we've got this really good, this incredible fandom, this incredible community that keep playing our games. You know, the whole of Bethesda's E3 conference this year, they have those little interchangey bits, one at the beginning, one at the end, and a few in the middle. And they're like, these are our people. These are our players. Like, oh, I really like Bethesda. I love the worlds you do. They just play themselves off.
We're
making the games for you. And it's like, yeah, but when you hear films saying, we made this film for the fans, you've got things like Batman v Superman or Suicide Squad. And it's like, they say that because the films are crap. And they're trying to play it off as like, oh, we're doing it for fan service. That's never always the best thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're just trying to milk that bit of community. Because you know, there's still a lot of people playing 76.
Yeah.
It's genuinely surprising how many people are still playing 76.
Mm-hmm. The idea of it is decent.
Conceptually, like, you know, it's fantastic. As I will always stand by that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think they're just trying to bleed those consumers dry. But it's like, I think every time they do something, every time they try and dip their toe in the water, it scares off another chunk of fans.
Yeah.
Like this fridge stuff, like repair kits was a while ago, and now it's this fridge. And it's like, surely you'd give them, that'd be the kind of thing you just patch in.
Well,
surely.
I mean, like the Broken Steel thing got mentioned, but like that reminds me of like the end of Fallout 3, which notoriously ended on like a weird choice that you quote unquote didn't have to make. Like, spoilers of Fallout 3. But the final sort of choice in that game involves having to pull a switch in a room that is irradiated. So if you go into there, you're going to die. But one of your companions is a mutant and is completely immune to radiation. So it made perfect sense that they could just go pull the switch and you wouldn't have to kill yourself.
You couldn't tell them to go in.
Yeah, so like Bethesda addressed that and said, well, we'll release a patched ending and a whole bunch of extra stuff that you can do as an end game, but we're going to charge you for it. And it's just like, okay, like you've kind of got this weird sort of line that they're trying to walk where like they're trying to serve the fans and oh, it's for you and we listen to you and everything, but we're going to charge you for it. And it's like, it's a weird new apex of crap to then be, well, we're going to charge you for a fridge.
That's sort of like charging you for a test and then charging you when you say, oh, that was crap. So here's another one. And then,
yeah, it'll be that'll do better, even though we still get to put like a price tag on it.
Like I said, it's a shame that they keep digging Fallout 76 into a hole. Mm-hmm. It's a shame. It's sort of sitting. It's like there's an equal force on both sides. There's part of it pulling itself back out of the ground, and there's another bit pulling it down again. And it's like it's going to get to Wastelanders, and then it'll be like launch all over again.
Maybe
like,
we'll
jump in and go, oh, okay, it's actually not as much better as I thought. Mm.
Like, I think it's like Bethesda have a history at the minute, or the last few years, especially this generation overall, of just getting in their own way. Like they don't seem to be able to just not Bethesda it too much. Like they either need to give it more breathing room so something's more polished at launch, or not get in the way of like DLC practices or patches and things like this. Like there's just so many instances now across this generation where, like I said, they can't seem to just let something breathe for a bit. I'm going to quickly mention Gears 5. I think you guys covered this in the main news.
We did.
Because it's on. It's just worth like talking about the state of Gears 5 just quickly, because obviously it's massive final, you know, newest installment in a legendary franchise and everything. And the piece of news that kind of came out of it is that it's overtaken Fortnite as the most played game on Xbox Live right now. Only on the dashboard it comes up underneath the most played tab ahead of Fortnite. So there aren't any specific statistics to say like, well, there are more consecutive players or whatever. But at least it seems like it's kind of getting back out there as like this, you know, known quantity. And God knows the Xbox One has needed an exclusive.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Because it's been a long year without anything else on their front.
Yeah.
So it's like one of the few games that I would actually potentially buy an Xbox for, because I haven't got a PS4, but I've always been... There's nothing that's ever really like sold me on getting the Xbox, but the Gears games I used to play on the 360,
yeah,
and this one's come out and it just looks pretty sick.
Mm-hmm. I think like they've needed something this big to tie onto Game Pass as well. Like the idea, you know, you just pay like a handful of notes, like whatever, like every month, and it's like here's like something like Sea of Thieves, Crackdown 3, and Gears and the Master Chief Collection and everything. Even though those games didn't like make massive waves when they first launched, like the idea of getting a whole bundle package for a monthly price kind of finally makes Game Pass really make way more sense.
I think they needed that draw. I said this earlier. They needed that big thing to get people into Game Pass, because conceptually Game Pass is brilliant. I've been using it on PC, it's amazing, but they needed that thing to get people in and to have people realize that this is a thing.
Yeah.
Like it's I'm scrolling through this ridiculous library of games. Obviously it's the PC one is dwarfed by the one on Xbox One,
right?
But it's like there's just so much here and I'm paying like a fiver a month
it
for
is
it.
Weird
it is I said to Josh, it's too good to be true.
Yeah,
it is too good to be true, but it's there.
I
but
think
it's real.
Maybe making a loss at this moment just so that it gets people talking about it, because it does, like, I mean, obviously they haven't sponsored any coverage or anything, but it does feel ridiculous. It feels, like you said, too good to be true. I look at the list of games that you get for the price that they're asking, and it's like generations worth of stuff. Like it is a ludicrous I don't know, combination of titles and franchises.
But I think in foresight, they can see that becoming a more like financially viable thing, because versus, I said to Josh, like versus a couple million sales at $60 a pop versus maybe like double that at $4.99 a month. Like that's going to be getting a lot of people in, and I'm going to keep playing for Game Pass.
It makes me curious how they're going to sort of monetize it on top of what they've done, because they have the tiered one, they have Game Pass and then Game Pass Ultimate, and it's like that's pretty much it. It's like, what do you have, like Game Pass Deluxe, like Game Pass Premium, like, you know, whatever. It's like you've kind of set your price, like unless you do a Netflix and just kind of bump it up by a couple of pounds, a couple of dollars,
they might have to, because like every time it happens with Netflix, people don't really kick up that much of a fuss, at least not what I've seen, because it went up again literally like the other week.
It's weird the way it happens, because obviously they can just beam it straight to your TV and it's not this big public event. It's just sort of like, oh, we're charging you more, okay, button. And it's like, yeah, okay, fine, yeah, let me watch the thing I was gonna watch.
I just get an email and it's only ever like 99p, and it's like, but then it's been 99p for the past few months.
Like it's like
they could have just, if I stuck on a fiver at the 2017 he would have been like, wait,
I think if they sort of like tweeted it out it would be like more of a thing, but like the way that they do it with subscription models maybe can allow them to sort of tweak their prices a bit without it becoming this big sort of negative thing.
But they just focus on the people that pay for it, basically, like, because there's no point in people getting out there, there's no point in opening that door for outrage for people who don't use Netflix,
so they might as well just keep it within
the bubble of people that actually pay for it, because if you're still paying for it, it means you're still using it.
True. And it's so, like, once you're locked in, it's like, hey, 99 pence to keep going, like that's way more palatable than you know, opening by saying it's £15 a month or whatever. Also on the other side for Gears 5, just to mention, is that the state of that game is a mess. Like technically, like that thing has just bugs up the wazoo. Like I've played through the whole thing, but the amount of autosave bugs and the amount of people that have experienced them, like that game will just get to a point and just hang on the saving icon forever. And apparently it's because it has a whole load of server sync stuff it has to do, which I think it's kind of hitching, maybe because of the amount of people that are playing it. But
just unplug your Ethernet.
Maybe that would be the way to work. Just put the console offline. But yeah, the way that game is at the minute, it's just riddled with a whole bunch of bugs. Even though the game itself is extremely solid, like I have like some issues with certain acts in it or whatever, but overall it's a really solid package and it's a good sort of showcase of what you can get with Game Pass. But I'd be remiss to not mention the state of it technically, because the Reddit and various sorts of like social media posts and everything are on fire with how much it's like GS5's doing really well. It's like, yeah, but technically it's an absolute like tire fire. So I mean, the multiplayer seems to be a lot smoother than the campaign, so hopefully the campaign sorts itself
out.
Yeah,
that is weird.
I wonder if they just thought that people would get into the multiplayer, like especially if you're on Game Pass. Yeah. A couple of casual matches with my friends or whatever, because they're all trying it. I don't know how much they obviously like prioritized it, but so far Versus seems to be more stable than the campaign, which just kind of falls apart at every turn.
That's weird.
So there was that. NBA 2K20 had a horrific launch as well. We've kind of covered this across the last week, but have you seen the footage of this beer?
No, I have not seen
it. So it's a lovely little game. You know NBA as a the 2K franchise. Yeah. So they pretty much just doubled down on the worst aspects of that series by just launching it and going head first on slot machines and wheels of fortune, roulette wheels and stuff to unlock things. It's like in amongst the conversation around how much of these practices regarded as gambling, whoever designed their sort of unlock systems were just sort of like, we're just going to kind of stare it in the face.
NBA 2K19 was the most egregious use of it ever. Like last year, I remembered because I did a video on it. It was the like the dumbest ways developers tried to get your money. And I quoted a guy, one of the, like the heads of 2K, who said, microtransactions are an unfortunate consequence of modern gaming. It's like, no, you're putting it there.
Yeah, you've made it.
It's not like Microsoft and Sony and Steam or Epic will say, do you have a microtransaction system in your game? No? Well, then you're not going on the store. Yeah, it doesn't work like that.
It's not
that.
A prerequisite.
They just say, you know, all the budget stuff, that's one of the things that annoys me the most about it. Oh, it costs a lot of money to make a game. So does making a multi, like $100-$300 million film, and yet ticket prices, especially here, are a fiver a pop. you don't pay a fiver to get in, and when they add an intermission into the film and say, oh, well, by the way, we need the second fiver.
Yeah, and of course.
You don't get that. But like,
plus, like they're the ones that are setting the budgets. Like something like Hellblade proved that you could do a gorgeous AAA looking game on a way more reduced budget. And you know, you need to look across like the indie space to find things that use Unreal 4 and use things that make them look more visually appealing, that can hang with the big names, that don't cost ludicrous, exorbitant amounts of money.
People see straight through it. Yeah, there are other people who probably are like, yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. They say, oh, the games cost money. Okay, whatever. We'll keep paying money. But it's just all based on greed.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Greed and inflation. Like, you know, turning the game into a grind fest just to push people towards paying for it. Which
PS5 has too, to be fair. I'm going to drop that in. Yeah. Another thing that came out of this as well is just a whole bunch of different MPs sort of like trying to get it across. They had this whole report about the general state of these sorts of mechanics in games that age-wise you could argue are aimed at children. Like NBA is like...
Fortnite.
And NBA is all aged for all kind of thing. So the conversation that happened the last couple of days that a lot of MPs in the UK got together and just said, look, this stuff needs to be classified as gambling. Gambling to children, even if you're not... Well, they kind of are intentionally going, here's a slot machine, here's a roulette wheel or whatever.
Yeah.
Which I guess is like a wider conversation for a
bit. Well, it's gambling.
Like, yeah, I would say so. Like, I totally think so.
If it's literally like a roulette wheel, then
It's blatant gambling. Like, the funniest thing that could come out of this is the idea that every game that has any kind of loot box, like gamble slot machine system... 18. Because that's gambling. Maybe. 18. Mm-hmm. Bosh.
I think the way that they seem to argue it on the gaming developer side or the publisher side, it's nearly always the publishers.
Always the publishers.
It tends to be that, you're not wagering anything. You're not losing anything. Well, and you're always going to get something back. It's just that then it gets into the weeds of like, how much worth is that duplicate that you got? Or how much worth does...
It's like the weird toy YouTube channels that go to the capsule machines.
Or like magic cards or something.
Yeah, to go and buy... There was a set of these capsule machines that wanted all the set, and they like worked out how much it would cost them to get every single one. There's like 6 or 7, 8 of them, and it cost them hundreds just to get them out of a physical machine. Mm-hmm. It's I understand that it's not necessarily gambling because you're not, as you say, not wagering anything, but it's a new form of it.
It's so obvious.
It's blatantly obvious.
Especially like in terms of a thought process or like a mindset that you have when you go into that stuff. I mean, it's the stuff that EA were tapping into when they said, oh, people like it. People like surprise mechanics. And it's like, adults might. Like for the most part, a child like might enjoy it in the moment, but doesn't really see what the effect of it is going forward.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a whole thing at the minute. The BBC is sort of looking into it and they published a lot of stories on it. A lot of stories and anecdotes coming from people who have sent sort of emails and stuff in to the BBC saying, look, I feel like my child's addicted to this. They're always asking for more money so I can spin the wheel again or whatever.
I mean, if like the people that are spinning the wheels, they're obviously, I mean, I don't myself, but like they're already willing to spend the money, so why don't you just say whatever is, you know, like if they're trying to get the best players in FIFA or something, like for example, and just like put them at a higher price and just say that's what they're worth. If you really want them, just pay for it instead of doing the risk.
But again,
I understand obviously you don't want to pay as much for those players by risking it.
You don't want to
end up spending more.
But I mean, like something like that, like always makes me think that you could have just like tiered playlists. Like, I mean, the way the industry refers to people like that, like the business people, the people with exorbitant amounts of, disposable income.
The whales.
They always call them whales. Like they have so much money. They're the whales. We market to them. And so much game design is now targeted at them, even though it's not overtly the case in terms of the marketing and the advertising. But that is the case. Put them in a separate playlist for me. I would rather all those people that have all, if it's just a big money fight, I have more money than you, so I'm going to throw it at my character so he's more powerful than you, then put that in a separate playlist. for me, that's maybe one of the only solutions to it. Because you'd have to take it out of games like NBA.
Yeah.
Unless you want, like you said, unless you want to change the age rating. But if the mentality behind the people that are buying in so they can spruce their characters up is to have a better character than the most expensive person down the street.
They just always hide behind that. It's optional. It's like, of course it is. It's optional to buy the game in the first place. Yep. So, you know. people are like, you know, voting with their wallets and, you know, bombing reviews and stuff like that. Like, we were looking the other day, NBA 2K20 is the second lowest rated game on Steam overall, and there are thousands of games on Steam in a second bottom.
I would love to know what design meeting they had where they obviously think they're a little bit cheeky, just sort of putting slot, like literally visual slot machines into a game to unlock the, you know, sort of like player buffs and whatever, different character cards and everything. Like they know exactly what they're doing, and they must know that too. So it's like, it kind of is this weird sort of like cheeky approach, like, oh, we'll just steer into it, and then at least we know what we're doing and what we're offering. But it's one of the worst examples of the most predatory thing that we've had this generation made visual.
Like, weirdly, the NBA of all things is the worst for it.
It's just because 2K are just sort of making a big cash grab. I'm kind of waiting for a Borderlands 3 thing to explode.
Hands on that. They're going to put an Activision and drop it in like a few months later, aren't they?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, baby.
Spin the roulette wheel for an extra gun or whatever. Oh. We can quickly talk about Tokyo Game Show. It's still going on. It's between the 12th and the 15th, so it'll end by next week. We already had this big Hideo Kojima sort of 50-minute demo for Death Stranding, because he admitted on Twitter that most people don't seem to know what he's doing. But even he said in an interview that he doesn't understand what he's making. So it's like, okay.
It's hopeful.
Yeah. Sure. So where are you guys at on Death Stranding before we do specifics?
I don't really...
Loving what you see.
Yeah. It looks cool. It looks really good anyway, in terms of the graphics, and obviously because they're motion capturing like other big actors like Norman Reedus and Mads Mikkelsen. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the rest.
There's like Leia Sadu.
Yeah.
Guillermo del Toro's in there.
But like in terms of like whatever the trailers have ever shown us, it, like, I've got no idea what's going on. Like, when it, like, goes into his throat and there's the baby. Yep. And I figure that it must be some kind of... I mean, I don't know if that's just for a trailer and that's, like, just imagery, or is the baby actually inside him?
Well, so they've kind of, like, clarified some stuff. So, like, they put this thing out called the briefing trailer, which was mainly... It tends to be the game's... It's not the opening cutscene, but it's very early on cutscene. So, like, they sort of, like, clarified, like, the base sort of, like, you know, the structure of the game. Like, you're playing as Norman Reedus. You're trying to reconnect, like, a whole bunch of different cities across the US, because in the future there's been this apocalyptic event where time has stopped and it fractured a whole bunch of different people to go back and live in their own little colonies. So you're playing as a delivery man. Called Sam Bridges.
Delivering babies.
No, you need a baby to stay in reality, because if the baby's ill, then you fall into the underworld, and then you got to fight all the demons.
That's a big
video game. It's confusing. Like the stuff they showed off at Gamescom the other month was not good, in my opinion.
No, I hate it.
It really threw me off. Like, I wasn't that invested in Death Stranding, but that was the first time I like outwardly was like, what the crap am I looking at, man?
I think it's this just because they'd hyped up that reveal as well. Like, oh, Hideo Kojima's gonna be there.
And then Hideo like straight away goes, oh, so you're Tokyo Game Show. Yeah. And everyone just kind of went, oh.
One of the first things he said was, oh, I was planning on showing more stuff at Tokyo Game Show, but I've come here anyway. It's like, you probably shouldn't have done, to be honest. I don't need your little shreds.
It dropped a lot of people off. But that briefing trailer has definitely got me back on board, because there's a bit more context, because that was what was missing. That I feel like that should have been one of the first trailers they chose, and then they start showing all the weird stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people needed that sort of... It's not even a context, but it kind of is a context. Like,
you need
it's because
reason,
people just
yeah.
didn't know what to expect at all, whereas this briefing trailer gave you a bit more. So I'm more keen to actually play it when it comes out later this year.
Is that the thing you were going to say?
I was going to ask. A briefing trailer is a common thing, because that sounds like something that you would normally need a briefing trailer. Like,
I think it's weird because I think
it just makes sense on their own.
Yeah, I think the thing that he was trying to do with Death Stranding was kind of, you know, not reveal too much so that people would experience it in real time and whatever. But the sheer reality that it is this AAA game, it is this thing that Sony have invested like millions of dollars into. It is this sort of massive, you know, it's the next game from the Metal Gear creator. We'll see. I mean, maybe. But I think that at some point he had to address the fact that it's out like on November 15th or whatever.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of people, like until the briefing trailer, didn't really know what they were going to be doing in the game. So he also followed this up. There's the briefing trailer, which is the big cutscene, which establishes Norman Reedus's or Sam Bridges' motivations. There's also a 50-minute gameplay demo where Kojima just plays through it for 50 minutes and just shows you a whole bunch of mechanics. So some specific things that came out of that are that the game's flow is pretty much a survival game, where you pick different things that you want to deliver to one of these cities, and you have to try and find a center of gravity. You're setting up your character to deciding whether you want to have different sort of items and boxes boxes on your arms, on your back, on your legs, or whatever, and you're trying to find a center of gravity because that's going to make it harder for you to walk.
Oh, right. Okay. So you're like, just going to topple over.
Yes, literally. I mean, the detail, fine, but it's also like how, I mean, it might be like, it might almost be like a Papers, Please kind of thing of like, how can this be fun? And then you play it and go, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, they've got that and it's like, it reminds me of like Wii Fit, like trying to like balance on the board.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God. It's going to have a, what's it called? Ring Fit Adventure functionality when they
get it on the Switch. Just get it on the Switch. So yeah, they've, that was one of the mechanics is that you're forever at walking is a mechanic in this, but you can slip, you can fall on rocks, you can fall in water, you can lose your cargo, it can float off down the river and you got to run back and get it.
You can
and,
have a whiz.
You can have a whiz. You can whiz on some mushrooms. It makes things grow. You've got all these different... it's a thing, you know, Kojima. There's a whole bunch of different meters in the game. He needs to get sleep. He has like a sort of general sort of pleasure, like a well-being sort of meter. It shows him relaxing in a hot spring at one point, doing a bit of singing. There's a singing button if you want to sing. You know,
it gets to the point where like realism maybe is a bit too much.
A little bit. I mean, I'm game for the dumbness, but I guess it depends how much it gets in the way of actual gameplay.
Yeah, yeah.
So the vast majority is this sort of survival type stuff. It's a lot of walking. You get access to different drones that can carry stuff for you. It's a late game unlock, I guess. You get a hoverboard that you can ride. But yeah, they've sort of said that one of the main sort of things is just getting from A to B and sort of gamifying that process of climbing and exploring and foraging new ground and delivering stuff to people. And that seems to be one of the main hooks.
The demon storyline fits into that.
Well, so the demon stuff is that when you're on the way, and because of the whole time fracture thing that's like split everybody apart, most people have been sort of separated into this underworld, this underground sort of weird, like I said, demon realm. And all those spirits are always trying to like reach up and grab people and pull them down. Yeah, so occasionally it turns into more of a third person shooter where you'll get dragged into the underworld and you have to fight like big bosses and big things with demon heads and whatever. So it's kind of a game of two halves. But what do you think about how it's coming together?
Kind of intrigued, but also like, okay, what the hell is he doing?
You want to carry some boxes, mate? Put them on your head?
Maybe. I don't know. I think you just got to wait and see. But it's like, it hasn't gripped me enough to think I'm 100% getting this. I feel like I will.
I definitely will at midnight, but that's me.
I'm not completely sure. It might get to that, like, and it's like 11:59. I'm thinking, do I? And then either I will or I won't. But I'm very much on the fence. I'm kind of intrigued because I want to play a Kojima game and actually experience whatever the hell it is he does.
You should just play Metal Gear.
But like
at this stage,
yeah, I don't know. It's in a weird spot for me.
It is. Where are you on it?
I don't really.
I don't know.
I don't really buy games unless I'm as you said, I'm completely invested in. Like, so this is kind of. It's to be honest, I'm probably not going to buy it.
Right.
But I might find out some news about it online or whatever. But like, I only really, and in terms of like demon stuff, I'm just looking forward to Doom.
Oh, shout!
Yeah.
If you're going to talk about like general sort of games that are doing demons well for the rest of 2019,
yeah. That's the most satisfying thing I've ever played. Mm-hmm. Like, I tried going back to it actually, but it wasn't as I don't know. It's still great, but like, obviously, it's not the first time I play. So I'd much rather, in terms of the Death Stranding. That side of the game sounds pretty interesting. I didn't even realize that was part of the game. I just thought it was like Norman Reedus the baby and walking around delivering boxes, as you say. But there's like a sort of like demon thing. That sounds pretty cool.
Oh, there's some demon thing. It's there's like they showed a boss battle. It's like this sort of giant weird mutant thing that sort of made of like tentacles with a face, and he's like throwing grenades at it. Also, a little tiny DL, which is just brilliant and very Kojima. The grenades are made of bodily fluids. So
nice.
You know,
so
like,
okay, I'm done.
And I leave the room. So yeah, you get. I'm gonna detail two of these. You get blood grenades, which are the more sort of explosive ones. He makes them with his own blood. The other ones are made, and they're not. It's not that bad.
You get like a couple of grenades for
the entire game.
Yeah. What's the other one?
The other one is made of the other one's made of every other fluid that comes off him when he takes a shower. So he's just there's a little
every other fluid. Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if you can customize that. I don't know if eating all the shrooms gives you different fluids. I don't know, but at the minute we're getting fluid grenades, bodily fluid grenades.
I need to watch this, but I'm also completely done.
Yeah, completely done.
Kind of didn't think it could get more Kojima, but he's just steering in.
He's done it.
He's doing a 2K.
So you've gone mad with power.
Yes, and it's kind of glorious and also kind of tragic. But yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments below. The general state of Death Stranding and everything else that we've covered so far. For now, though, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Thank you for listening.
And Peter Graves.
Thank you very much.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
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 Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.